Are you sure you want to stay here? It looks creepy.
But Savannah, this is the House of Mystery. Let's see, the brochure says true crime, conspiracy, alternate history, all rooms right here in the house.
I don't know, which room is ours?
Yes, this may be our room. Oh, well, sorry, ma'am. Obviously, this is not our room.
Ah, here's our room. True crime.
You have now entered the House of Mystery on KXIM 98.3 FM Iowa with your hosts Al Warren, Kev Thompson, and Julie Sav.
Back in the House Mystery on KKNW 1150 AM Seattle. I'm Al Warren.
And I'm Kev Thompson, coming out of KVFX in Clearview, Florida.
There we have another day. Easter is over for everybody except for in Canada, who this is their national holiday today.
Hmm. Thank God. Pardon the pun.
Oh. 4-day weekend. That's the way it should be. I'll tell you, we don't get enough.
Oh, Lord, just keep going. We only get three.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so it's been a grand week. I just got back from Hollywood, and, of course, a lot of people have been sending in questions. We will go over some of these grand experiences of having a show, making a show out of someone's book. And that would be me. And, oh, did you see that? The cover of Confessions of Murder got nominated, hey, for best cover.
Yes, best cover. You need to go vote.
Yeah, people, go vote. Just check. Where, out, well, it's on allauthors.com is a website that you can go to. You don't have to be a member, and you don't have to join them or anything like that. They're just from readers vote, and it's all open for anybody now that they've been nominated. So go ahead and vote.
I may be biased now, but I think it's an awesome cover. I really do. Remember, a lot of work actually went into it. I mean, we went through, what, several possibilities?
Yeah. And remember, that was the one when we're finished. I wasn't sure I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. But it's what the people say. So now we've got another great true crime case, so much to talk about here. And joining us, we have someone that's... actually, I've just heard a little bit about her, and there was a slight connection from...
Guys, please be quiet.
Well, there you go. You talking to us, or...
People are... little people that are home for spring break seem to have no manners.
Well, I'm afraid to talk now.
I think we got rid of the problem, and my name's Jennifer Weiss. I'm sorry that I interrupted everybody.
and you heard it live here first on the House of Mystery, an actual live crime.
There you go.
this is like Cops, you know.
Yes, live PD with Dan Abrams, yeah. Which brings up a whole other show, but we'll talk about that later.
Wow. Well, okay, so, well, Jen, welcome, thank you for Jenna. Being here.
Thank you, guys. I'm so excited. How's Seattle?
Seattle's always nice. It's a little wet, but I'll tell you.
Yeah, it's very, very quiet right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you got told.
Thank God.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself to start. Who is Jen, and how... did this all come about for you?
I'm just a girl, a regular girl, that was adopted. I came from the Children's Home Society of New Jersey, and I got put with a really great family when I was 10 weeks old. I got the opportunity to be with a great family, and as any adopted child would feel, I had this nagging feeling behind every little closed door in my brain that I wanted to go back and find my birth parents somehow. And I think that a lot of adopted kids try to do that or maybe feel that way. And so naturally, I just did what I could, and I landed myself over at the Children's Home Society, and they were more than upset to tell me that my mother was killed by a serial killer and that they had put newspaper articles in my file, and they really couldn't give me anything else about my mom other than the newspaper articles that they saved.
Oh, wow.
And I was 26. I was 26 when I went back and tried to find her. So it was just kind of disappointing, and I brushed it off back then. I'm going to be 40 now, so a lot of time has passed since I was 26 when I really found out about everything. And now that people are interested in the criminals' minds. I see this in documentaries, and I see it in newspaper articles. Just people are interested in the criminal acts of criminals, and I thought it would be an okay time in history for me to approach this man who killed my mom and ask him my own questions that I had for a long time.
Now, that's a large step, Jennifer, from, you know, being in a foster home and being adopted to suddenly finding out that your mother was killed by a serial killer. So before we get to the obvious question of who, when, and why, what led you on this search? First of all, I know you said you had a nagging feeling, but what did your adopted parents tell you first?
I was told different things at different times in my life that basically when you're 8 or 9 and you ask, hey, who's my real mom? In some kind of small childish fight at 9 years old, my mom said, she died in a fire, Jennifer. And, you know, and then that was, I put it to rest for a couple of years, and maybe I asked again around 11, 12, and then it was, your parents were killed in a motorcycle accident. Like, something always tragic, but should they try to brush it off, like, you know.
And it kept changing. It was inconsistent.
Right. And I couldn't live with that. I actually couldn't do it. So I invited myself up into the attic, and then I found one piece of evidence which said Children's Home Society on it, and it was what looked to be a feeding chart for a baby whose name was whited out, and another child's name was printed on top. So both of my names were on that document, and I have both birth certificates now to prove that. So
would it be safe to say that if the story had have stayed consistent, you would have believed it and been happy with it?
I probably would have never looked back. If she would have said, your parents died in a motorcycle accident, and then that was really what happened, I would have never... Exactly. You're right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the name of your work is Serial Killers Need Hugs Too. And that, wow, you want to talk about out of left field. I mean, that is, you know, that first of all, that's very attention catching. And of course, people, you know, like you said, you know, today we're kind of inundated with crime and we want to see criminals get justice, and especially criminals that consider themselves uncatchable, such as serial killers. So your timing is absolutely perfect. So you invited yourself upstairs and you find the feeding chart. And how did you come to the realization that your mother was, you know, killed by a serial killer?
Well, at that time, I did not have the means. I didn't have a license. I couldn't go and look by myself. I still lived with my parents when I saw that document in the attic. I was still like maybe a senior in high school. So that was something I kept to myself. I just finished high school and I didn't really look for her then. It didn't say my mother's name on that document. I knew nothing about my mother still. But I knew the name she gave me.
Which was?
Sanaya Jacqueline Roberts.
One more time.
Sanaya Jacqueline Roberts, spelled G-H-A-N-I-Y-A, Jacqueline Roberts, was okay. One of her aliases.
So this goes even deeper. Yeah, this goes even deeper.
She gave me her street name, which was one of her street names, which was Jackie Roberts.
So I don't mean to sound insulting, but I got to ask the obvious question that one of the listeners are probably going to come to us with. When you say it was one of her aliases, why would she have the necessity to use an alias?
Because she was prostituting herself on the weekends and living in Trenton during the week.
Mm-hmm.
And she would take the train into New York and be whichever name she wanted to be and get arrested as whichever girl it was that day.
Now, no shame in that. That's actually going to become very, very important as we get deeper into what made her vulnerable to a serial killer in the first place. Did I lose you? Hello?
Yeah, it seems like...
It did... Wow, what happened?
I don't know. It doesn't tell me. It just...
Okay, let's bring her back.
Can you hear me?
Oh.
Yeah, we lost you for a minute there. I was like, wow, I hope it wasn't me. I hope I didn't ask the wrong question.
No, I think it was because it's a cellular phone.
Ah, well, don't move.
Don't move. No, all I right. haven't. It was sitting on the table by itself.
Ah, okay, well, I'm checking. Yeah, we're still recording. We can always edit that little bit out there. Now, just to recap, we were talking about your real mother's alias and, you know, why she used an alias. And I was, you know, importing the fact that that would be significant because people of that, you know, industry are vulnerable towards serial killers. Would that be a fair statement?
I agree.
So you find no. Go ahead.
I don't think they know. I don't think they know that they're just the target for serial killers.
Well, I mean, you know, before we get so impersonal about it, you know, you discover this fact about your mother. I mean. You know, what kind of coping mechanisms did you have for that other than just getting it down from what you've told us thus far?
I'm sorry, what is the question actually? How did I overcome the fact that she was a prostitute?
Yes, yes. And, you know, you continued to search for her. You continued to look for her. How did you reconcile this fact with yourself?
It was a process. It was long. It was hard. It's not easy to digest that. It's not easy to wake up knowing I'm a child of prostitution. It's something, it's a fact that I have to just overcome every time I feel like it's hindering me, which it doesn't usually anymore, but it could at times be irritating to hear about. I know it's hard for my adoptive family to hear about me talking about myself that way and describing myself even as someone else's, you know, because to them, I'm just theirs and I'm from my mother and father that they know, which is my adoptive family. And they would never want me to look back at any of this because it's revolting and it's disgusting and scandalous and something that they would want to sweep under the rug and never bring up.
Mm-hmm. So you discover what her occupation was, and how did you discover the killing? I mean, was this just due to those articles, or was this due to, you know, this entire realization? Yes.
The killing I found out about when I was 26. That's when I saw the newspaper articles from the children's home. I had the time. I had gotten a job at a self-storage. I was running a self-storage place. So I had time to look on the computer hours and hours. And I was just on a mission for my 26th birthday to find out anything I could about my birth mother. And I was so excited to go and find her and had this fantasy that it didn't even matter if she was a crackhead or a regular person or a bad person or still a prostitute. I wanted to meet her and talk to her. So I just couldn't wait for that opportunity. And I thought for sure it would happen. And when I got there and they pushed those newspaper articles in front of me, I was literally pissed at the world. I had a chip on my shoulder that I never thought would ever change. And I was sometimes proud of the fact that I had this anger about me. So I thought I had a right to have the anger. I had a right to have the anger because my mom got her head cut off. And I could use that. And I would be like, you think your day was bad? My mother got her head cut off, sir.
Well, I don't even know what to say to that. How did you feel? You've gone through all of this. And I understand you just said how you felt. But tell us about that moment. You have gone through all of this to find your mother. You know, you've dealt with inconsistent stories your entire life. You knew you were adopted. You've gone through all of this to find your mother, and you show up and they toss some newspaper articles at you. When you say you were pissed, I mean, take us to that moment.
I was really upset, and I cried a lot about it because I took bits and pieces of the article and magnified it, like the fire and the fact that she was headless, and Trenton was where she came from, where she was working, not where she came from, but where she was working and where she was living at the time. And that's always been close to where I live now and where I grew up. So Trenton was just always gave me a bad feeling. And for a few years, it was a depressing topic for me, but it wasn't just a topic. It was everything that I was looking for.
So who was the killer? Who was on these articles?
A man named Richard Cottingham.
So tell us about him.
I didn't know much about him other than what the articles were saying and what the internet was saying. And I know back in 2006, I believe you were able to access the New Jersey Department of Corrections website, and you could see all the inmates and know if they're still incarcerated and have a peace of mind, kind of, that this person is incarcerated and this is his number and this is where he is and yada, yada, yada. So after I came out of the situational depression that it had me in, I was able to go and look online to see if he was still incarcerated, if he lived or died, if he was there, you know? And I kept a watchful eye on that, and I started making jokes because there was a picture of him on the site, so I knew he looked like Santa Claus back in 2006. That's when I started making jokes saying, you know, it's not your mom, Santa. And I was posting on a Blogger blog at that time, so I was already trying to speak to an audience about it. An audience that didn't exist, though, just making the blog and talking about him and feeling comfortable with it.
Now, how did you meet Peter Ronsky?
I wanted to reach out to other authors who wrote books about Richard. So I reached out to Rod Leith and Nadia Fazzani, and out of all three of them, he was the nicest, and I said, would you like to work with me on a project involving Richard? And he, of course, said yes.
So now, if I remember right, there's a lot to do with the serial killer coming up in his new book that comes out. I believe it's this fall, if I remember.
It's August, called Sons of Cain. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it must be. That must be the one. Yes.
Yeah, I called him when he was just finishing writing Sons of Cain, and he was able to add me to the end of that book. It's in the afterword where he introduces my idea that serial killers need hubs too. And who on earth and why on earth is that even happening? So that's me.
Yeah. Well, with everything now, how has this changed you? How do you feel now?
I feel really terrific about the project because I manifested this. And Richard could have easily, a year ago when I reached out to him, said, hey, look, lady, I'm a serial killer and I don't want to talk to you. And I definitely don't want to be friends with you. And I think you're a nut job. And he didn't. He actually said, I'm really sorry from the bottom of my heart. And if there's anything I can do to change the past, I would. And I said, great. I'm going to need you to cut your beard and clean yourself up. Change your attitude.
Now,
start telling the truth.
Now, Jennifer, you had this conversation with him. Did you believe him? I mean, knowing that this man is a sociopath?
I came to the belief that he is believable, yes. It's only happened over time that we've established a friendship. Mm-hmm. And I can't build any of my relationships without trust.
Now, I think it'd be a fair question. I mean, I heard what you said, but how did this man who killed your mother, he's a serial killer, known serial killer, you know, is sitting in prison. I mean, first of all, that's what we call a clue. He's sitting in prison, yet he was able to gain your trust. I mean, what process did he go through to do that?
I didn't really give him time to process anything. I hit him really hard with my first letter, which, if you want me to read it to you, I will.
Sure, we have a little bit of time. Go ahead.
Okay, I said, hi, it's Jennifer. I'm actually Dita Gazzardi's daughter. She gave me up for adoption a few weeks after she had me in Trenton, New Jersey, all the way back in 1978. I know things between you and her didn't go so well, but don't let that get in the way of me and you developing a friendship, hopefully. I thought it would be a great time to tell you I've been thinking about you for the past 11 years since I found out about my biological mom, and I wondered if you would be interested in letting me into your life for visits, mail, and whatever you want. I actually care about you, and I'm not ashamed to say I have love for you if you'll let me love you. My purpose for coming to spend time with you is so I can face my biggest fear, which for a long time was actually you. I am happy to say I'm no longer afraid after seeing the work you did with Nadia Fazzani. I figured you might allow me in to see you if you let her into your world and mind. I don't really care about talking about the killings as much as I care about telling you jokes and making you laugh. Honestly, I do look a lot like my mom. I hope you won't mind the strange resemblance. Also, strangely enough, your inmate number is a compilation of my birthday numbers, 51678. There's so much I want to talk to you about. You're going to love me. I can't wait to bring something special to your life for real. Now that I figured out JPay, it's very cool. I can share a lot with you. JPay is an app that you can get on your phone where you can talk to inmates who are incarcerated. That's it.
Now,
that was pretty straightforward.
Now, here's a fair question. How much of that letter were you serious about, and how much of that was in jest? Because just listening to it as the average Joe, it almost sounds like you're being, you know, pardon the pun, but a smart aleck with him.
I was.
So how did it go from you despising this man enough to be a smart aleck to you're now visiting him in prison? And
I'm still...
keep in mind, the name of your blog is Serial Killers Need Hugs Too.
Yes. My opinion from the beginning has not changed about him. From the beginning when I sent him the letter, which was last April. So I've always been in jest and a smart ass with him and honest. It's not hard for me. After seeing the interview he did with Nadia, I was totally comfortable going to see him and talking to him because he's willing to answer questions and he lied in his video with Nadia. And then that was one of the driving forces behind me wanting to see him and question him myself, because I thought, wow, you're boasting about killing up to 80 to 100 women. Let's talk about this. I need names. I need body dump spots. We got to get a list together. This is not right.
So what happened when you visited? I mean, what did he say? What was his reaction?
Well, on the first day, my main concern was asking him, was my mother's killing a random act? He said no. I said, well, how long did you know my mom? He said, I knew your mother for years.
Really?
And I said, okay, well, is it possible that you could have been sleeping with her in 1977? He said, it's definitely possible. I said, well, would you do a DNA test with me? Because I want to find out that you're not my father, or if you are, then I'd like to know that too. And he said he would. And those questions snowballed because I didn't think he was going to say he knew her. I thought it was random. I was telling people in my life, he couldn't have known my mom. He's a serial killer. He just kills people because that's what he does. He's a killer. But it wasn't true. That was my belief, and it was not true. It wasn't until I asked him that I found out the truth, and he knew her.
Wow.
I was blown away by that.
Okay. So we're to the point of possibly a DNA test. Did you ever do that? I mean, is this man your father?
I can't wait to find out. I'm filing the paperwork as we do this interview. It took a long time because I was letting him figure out a way that he could possibly help get this done for me. He said, I think that I'll be able to maybe see if I can help you get this done. So I had been waiting for him to see if he could help me get this done, and since it's coming to a year now, I'm going to just take the matters into my own hands and have to file myself.
Because this almost sounds like season one of Slasher on Netflix. I mean, you've gotten us to this point. I mean, has he said anything that maybe possibly he is your father, and what were his motives for killing your mother?
He thinks it's possible that he could be my father, but it's not probable. And then he starts going into the math of how many guys my mother could have been with. And he'll do the calculations to actually come out to a number. And I could just laugh at him. And I say, Richie, you know, you were with all these different women. How can you tell me you know where all your semen was? Can you tell me with 100%...
Oh, he's toying with you.
...accuracy that you... that you know where your semen was and during all these altercations with all these women. You know. And he said, no, I don't. And I said, then shut up. You don't know anything, and it's possible. So we're not going to know until we find out. Because he doesn't want it to be true that I'm his child. You know? Because then we can't joke around in a jovial way like he likes to joke around with me. Then it would be inappropriate for him to joke around with me in the ways that we sometimes do.
In your mind, then, what would be the best possible outcome?
The best possible outcome is just simply following through with getting the test done and having the results. I do not care either way because it's not going to change who I am and who I've been to my friends and family and my children. I'm still an inspiration to all of them and special. And the test is not going to change that.
How, speaking of family and that, how has it affected your family and people around you and their lives?
I can tell you that nobody gives a shit about me. Everyone's wrapped up in their own lives. My oldest daughter's in college. My three little ones are constantly giggling and laughing and... Matter of fact, we had to drive through Trenton, and they know that the prison is over there. And when we drove by, they kept jumping in the back of the car singing, prison time, prison. And I said, guys, this isn't funny. We can't sing prison time. You know, this is a serious thing. And they just think everything is a joke. And they're at that age when nothing's really, they know a very watered down version of the fact that I did go and find my mom. She was killed by this man. He's now in jail for the rest of his life. That's really all they know. So I don't make a big deal about it. They're not affected. They're not upset. If anything, they make jokes because I'm usually a very funny person. For me to come out of the woodwork with something so sad and horrific is probably strange to a lot of people that I went to school with.
So the name of your blog, let's go back to that, because that's what sticks in my mind the most. Serial killers need hugs too. Is that a jest, and what, you know, what are you hoping to achieve, Jennifer, with that?
The serial killers need hugs too is shocking, but it's also a true statement when we get really right down to it, because there are visiting hours at the prison, and serial killers and criminals need hugs too. Actually, they get them at contact visits, which are on Sundays. There's two registration periods for that. And it's a thing. It's an actual thing that people can do. And in my case, I hugged a serial killer so that I could get the information I wanted as part of a restorative justice project, which is a victim-based criminal justice, where I get to meet with the offender with either a mediator if needed or not, which I didn't need a mediator because I wrote to him myself and he agreed to meet with me. And we agreed to forgive each other, or I forgave him and he welcomed me into his life. And I believe that he needed a hug, and I was just the right kind of person who could be the only person to give that to him and offer that to him. I'm his only friend in 40 years. And I'm happy to say that he is just a regular old man, which is another point that regular old men can be serial killers, you know? And everybody needs a hug, even the bad kid who got in trouble. I mean, look at the shooter at this school. Like, that kid needs a hug. I mean, you know, it's not.
And
everybody needs a hug, even a serial killer at some point.
Well, Jennifer, at a human level, I understand, and I have to agree with you at some point, but this man killed your mother. And follow me on this. He killed your mother. Your adoptive parents were very secretive about it, inconsistent about it. You happened upon this information by chance, discovered him by chance, and... for the average listener who's listening to this show, they need to understand how you went from sitting across the table from a serial killer, a sociopath. And let's be intellectually honest, sociopaths have no feelings for the most part. To you suddenly befriending this man, whether you say it's for information or not, you're hugging this man and exchanging human emotions with this man with no real end, you know, no means to the end. Where are you taking this? What is your end game with the man who killed your mother?
I established a relationship with him so that I could find out more about my mom. I knew that going there angry was not going to help me. And I didn't need to go there angry anyway, because it's all the craze that everyone wants to watch Mindhunters, and mm-hmm. everybody wants to see all these things on TV, which I don't watch. I haven't watched TV since 2006. I just know that all of this exists, and I also know that I had my own serial killer in Trenton right in my back pocket, and I could go and see him whenever I wanted. And I do make jokes, and I do make light of it because it makes him comfortable. And he shares things with me that are going to be helpful in talking about cold cases in the future. And that really turned things around for me, because through this process, I've met other victims' family members who haven't gotten closure in 50 years. And even though our stories are a little bit different, I think that I can help other people now while I'm trying to help myself. And it really is interesting and intriguing, because I've never would have thought that I would do anything prison-related or criminal-related in my whole life.
Well, Jennifer, I wished you would have said that in the first 5 minutes. Because here I've been chasing something, and I wished you had have said that in the first 5 minutes of the interview, why you did what you did, other than taking us on this long route to closure for other victims. Because as a human, as a person, that's really, really what I wanted to hear.
So tell I just us want you to know that.
Go ahead.
The cold case thing was only... That door only got opened because I was wondering about the remains of my mother, which were 40 years old, in ground that he buried. And we got to that point where I was asking him where the remains were that he hasn't told anybody about in 40 years. And it was just, these things were never important to anybody else. No one ever came to him and said, hey, can you tell me about these 40-year-old secrets? I really want to know.
Yes.
And I really wanted to know where her head was, because no one else knew and no one else cared.
Mm. Which is, again, we're back at the point, you know, that he chose, you know, a woman who was kind of forced into the position of prostitution to make a living, because they're, you know, they're the invisible people. And this is what makes them vulnerable to serial killers and sociopaths, and so much, you know, victimology that we could list. You know, it would take forever. But tell us a little bit about your blog before we have to let you go, and how people can contact you for more information about your story.
I have a blog. I also have a Facebook, and I'm on Instagram. It's all the same name. I am Jennifer Weiss, and it's W-E-I-S-S. I try to update people as much as I can, but I'm not allowed to give everybody the juicy details yet. I'd love to. I love talking about it with people in person, and I will be doing that in Princeton in May, and that information will be under the events section on my Facebook page. And I'm just thanking you for the opportunity to be heard on your show.
Well, Jennifer, we thank you. Thank you for coming on to the House of Mystery and sharing your story. I mean, wow. You know, what a tragic story it is, and you took the time to share it with us and go deep. And plus, you put up with me.
I hope you guys have a great rest of the week. Happy spring break.
Hey, I'll take it. Spring break, you know, I'm a parent of teenagers, so it's not all that relaxing to me, but I'll take it.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, and reach out if you ever want to hear any more deets.
You know what? We may want to once you get the results of that DNA test.
Psyched. Yeah, I'll let you know. I'm going to let everybody know.
Awesome. Well, Jennifer, thank you. Thank you so much. One more time with your contact information.
It's facebook.com/IamJenniferWeiss. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you, ma'am.
No more hangers! No wire hangers ever!
I'm Nancy Grace, and I'm on the House of Mystery.
Okay, and we're back, and it's Easter weekend is over. And, of course, Kevin's with me, and let's see. We've got Joe on the line here. He's just ready to give us our after-Easter countdown. How you doing, Joe?
Very good. Happy Easter to everyone. He is risen.
He is. Well, okay. Good. So what happened during the rising?
Well, it was a quiet weekend for me, but apparently Easter was very busy in the conspiracy world, so I should have said the conspiracy theorists have risen.
Don't we always? Can't keep a good man down.
So I have a very interesting top three for the week, and I'll get right into it. So number three is actually true, but then the conspiracy theorists have taken it a little bit further. A NASA-backed study says that acid clouds on Venus, which are at 500 degrees Celsius, so very hot, may contain actual life forms. And what NASA was referring to was potential microbes living in these acid clouds. What conspiracy theorists say is that NASA is hiding the true life forms, which are alien civilizations living in these acid clouds.
So there are, okay, let me make sure I got this straight. There are actual beings, physical beings living in acid.
Well, it sounds like 1968, right? But it's
yes.
Not. This is a different planet. This is the planet Venus. And they're saying microbes. So it's very small life forms could be there. That's what NASA says. But the conspiracy theorists say, no, NASA's trying to hide the alien civilization in the acid cloud.
The domed cities.
Well, it reminds me of a Star Trek episode where they have the city in the cloud up above the, you know, they have the people working in the mines. If you remember that episode.
I absolutely.
So, all right, so that's number three for the week. That just gets us started. Number two, a little more interesting, and it's a riff off of Pizzagate that seems to still be ruminating out there, and it was sparked by Roseanne. As you know, Roseanne had a very popular TV show that just got brought back, and I think she had something like 20 or 30 million viewers for the
episode.
So Roseanne tweeted out support for Donald Trump, and she seems to believe that Donald Trump has been breaking up sex rings or pedophilia rings out there. So she thinks that Trump has been giving a bad rap, and she says that Trump has been breaking up these sex rings and provided some links as evidence of this. And the conspiracy theory is called The Storm. which refers back to a Donald Trump speech that he gave a month back where he said this is just the beginning of a storm, and people hypothesized that he was referring to breaking up the Democratic pedophile rings.
Well, he had some help from a storm, per se.
But I don't know. Maybe I lost it. Maybe I'm not thinking here. Why would Roseanne bring that up? Like, what's the tie here?
That's what has everybody questioning, and I'm sure on our top three list next week we'll have some reasons why that might be. But for now, her character on the show seems to be a Trump supporter. But also Roseanne herself has tweets out that seem to be favorable towards Donald Trump, which don't make a lot of sense if you consider that she is an avowed socialist.
Mm.
But I think what's going on here is that Roseanne isn't so much about socialism, it's just she has an outsider view of politics, and I think that has sort of bent her in Donald Trump's direction. So she seems to be a lot more favorable of him than other more mainstream Hollywood types.
Well, how about this, Joe? This is just a thought, since we're all just sitting here talking, that maybe it's because she is a Hollywood insider and she's sick of the garbage that's going on that, you know, we talk about and we make fun of and, you know, we make into conspiracies, but maybe she's just sick of it and has thrown her support in a different direction.
Well, that could be true. It's just the one part where that goes off the rails is that the evidence she has that Trump is breaking up these child sex rings is they aren't really child sex rings. They're doing a lot of stings with prostitution. And the vast majority of people that they bust are prostitutes and johns and pimps, but not the child trafficking or the pedophilia rings that are hypothesized about, you know, on the Reddit forums.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just strange. I don't see her jumping on a bandwagon for him or for the opposition for any reason. Because, you know, in these climates, you can ruin your you know, who's going to watch your show?
I will. Well, and I don't even like Roseanne.
You see, but that's just what I'm saying. It's so, you know.
Well, the question is, would she be voicing support for Donald Trump if she wasn't playing a pro-Trump character on TV and if the show wasn't already doing well? I mean, those are sort of interesting questions.
Is she a method actor?
I think that's the right question to ask.
Well, there we go. I feel better.
Number one.
And number one goes back to the Girther conspiracy theory. This week...
I like good girth.
Yeah, yeah. I'm taking this personal.
This past week, Jim Messina, who is a former official in the Obama administration, has cited with a new form of the Girther conspiracy theory. And if you remember, the Girther conspiracy theory was that the doctor of President Trump lied about his weight and height and health condition in order to make the president look more healthy and fit than he actually was. Well, the new part of that conspiracy theory is that that doctor, Dr. Ronny Johnson, has been nominated to run the VA. And people are saying that the doctor must have lied about Trump's health in exchange for a position running the VA. So that's our conspiracy, number one conspiracy theory this week.
Wow.
I can't even say that I oppose that theory.
Sounds very real, right?
Hey, I hope that doctor is still in charge for my last year, you know, with the National Guard so that I can make my retirement.
Yeah, you'll be in great
shape. If he's willing to lie about my weight, heck yeah, I'm like 6'2 and a healthy 175.
Healthiest man alive.
Yes, until I reach retirement.
Well, you can be whatever height and weight you want as long as you do your show on the radio.
Exactly. Know?
True. And get Roseanne to back us. We're good.
Yeah.
This goes back to the idea that somehow we expect politicians to be appointed to positions based on their virtues and not based on some sort of inside horse trading. You know, and why would we be shocked that Trump or any president would appoint somebody who did them a favor, if indeed that was the case?
And why is that so unusual?
It's not. It's just with today's media that I will say is incredibly anti-Trump, that he can't do anything without it being part of some conspiracy. So,
yeah, but it keeps us in business, right?
It keeps the checks rolling in.
Now, speaking of conspiracy, ask Al. I have been waiting a couple, 3 weeks to ask you about this, Joe. I happened upon a conspiracy. It's not a new one, but it's one that I really think deserves a second look. And it is this, that each one of us with a Social Security number has an account that exists within the Federal Reserve.
Uh-huh.
And that if we have knowledge of said account, we can actually access that account to use to, you know, because we, as a citizen with this number, we have a monetary value. Have you heard of this one before?
Yeah, so this is fairly popular, and so there's a couple different strands of this, and some of it goes back to when we went off the gold standard. And some people say that you have an account with money in it. Some people say you have an account with gold in it.
Oh, boy.
Some people say that Nixon leveraged our lives when we came off the gold standard. Other people think that we have that we're somehow separate from the government and not subject to any laws, as long as we know about this secret thing that you're talking about. So I've been actually contacted by prosecutors and by defense lawyers to have me come in and testify on cases about this, where people either have not paid their taxes or they've gotten arrested for something and they're going to claim that they're a part of this redemption movement or something like this.
Oh, like sovereign citizenry.
Yeah, sovereign citizens. So a lot of this is very similar. But anyway, the people always go to jail, and they never get money, so. It could be true, it's just that it doesn't seem to work out in court in anyone's favor.
Well, let me cross that off my list, and damn. No, but I'd really like to explore this a little bit further with you in our next conspiracy roundup.
Well, I'd be happy to talk about that. I do want to get this in before we go, though. I received a phone call on the drive-in. And unfortunately, I had to hang up on the poor woman. But this is not an invitation for her to call me back. But she said that her ex-husband had joined the Illuminati and was out to get her. And normally, I tell people to either call the police or to get some other form of help. And I would have told her that, but I was driving through heavy traffic. But emails are probably better for me to deal with this sort of stuff than the phone calls.
Well, Al, isn't she scheduled for an interview here in a couple days?
Actually, yeah, she comes on at noon today. That's Alex Jones' ex-wife is on the show.
Oh.
So she may have been...
Well, if you thought divorce was costly, just imagine if you got divorced and then that person became an Illuminati overlord.
Oh, my.
I mean, just have that hanging over your head.
Yeah. Well, you see, this is where you need a good agent. That agent would have told her. When she phoned you and said to her husband, you'd say, well, speak to my agent.
Easy. Easy done.
Well, Joe, thanks again. Awesome.
Thank you. I'll see you guys next week.
Awesome. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, guys.
To find out more about our show, guests, or listen to a previous show, visit our website at www.somethingweirdmedia.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll see you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.